Morning to those online. We will go ahead and get started. So let's go ahead and look to the Lord. Father, we're grateful for the morning and for the opportunity we have to look into your word this morning, as we do on any occasion when we can. And so we're thankful again for your provision of your word, those things you want us to know. And as we look into your word this morning, might the Spirit guide our thoughts and have clarity of mind, and again, might it be something that would be edifying to us, and as it is your word, and we'd be grateful for that. Amen. Now, in the first century, when Paul wrote his epistles, most of the Roman Empire, there's some uncertainty as to how much of a proportion of the Roman Empire were slaves, but a good portion of the Roman Empire was made up of slaves. I read one place that said that a third of the Roman Empire was made up of slaves. I've heard much higher figures as well. And so a good portion of the empire was made up of slaves, though, and many of them, a good portion of those who were not slaves, were manumitted. They had been slaves before, and yet they had bought their freedom or reached a point where the masters released them for one reason or another. So slavery was something that was common. As we find slavery common in the Bible, if you go back to the book of Genesis, you do see Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers. And so Joseph was a slave, and God used it for good. His brothers intended it for ill, but God intended it for good. But Joseph served as a slave, and God used him to spare not only the offspring of his father, his family, his relatives, but then later on, we do find that after Joseph died, and the Israelites, the Jews were doing well, they were doing very well, that the Egyptians resented it, so they enslaved them. And so you had all the people were in slavery for 400 plus years. They were slaves to the Egyptians. And so you did have slaves. And so people were bought and people were sold as slaves. And so they were, slavery was nothing new, throughout the Old Testament. Slavery didn't begin in the United States of America. In fact, even at that time, there were slaves before that in Great Britain. There were slaves around the world. And in Africa, Africans had slaves. And so slavery was not something new. And that's something that will fall into our study this morning. And so as we look at people in the New Testament, I just wanted to say one more thing, too. And that is that both the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom of Israel went into slavery, and they were taken away into captivity. And if you read the book of Daniel, Daniel became a slave in Babylon, and so there was slavery. There were slaves, and there were slave masters. And so it wasn't uncommon. And if in those days, then in the Roman Empire, if they conquered a people, what did they do to them? Well, they didn't massacre them, but they would haul them off as slaves. And so they may have been well-educated, they may have been rich, they may have been well-cultured, but in both the Grecian and the Roman societies, they would carry them away and they would become slaves. They might have been slaves to somebody who was kind of an ignoramus, or somebody who was uneducated, somebody who wasn't cultured, and yet the slave may have had more going for him than the slave master. But that was common back in those days when you consider slavery. And so when you consider slavery back in those days, you had masters who were good masters who treated the slaves well. You had bad masters who ill-treated the slaves. And so a master could be kind to his slaves, and a slave could rise up in society in rank. He could be raised up to where he had status in the society because of where he was. In fact, a slave in those days could even own slaves. He could have his own property even on occasion. And so it was quite a thing, but it was accepted. Then it was never condemned. And so slavery, you had slavery in the Old Testament times, you had slavery in the New Testament times. And so today I don't condone slavery, but the Bible doesn't condemn it either. And so you had slaves and slavery was part and parcel of the early church. In fact, many in the early church were slaves. And so, you can think through, you have different references to slaves and how the slaves and masters were to relate to each other. Now, if you go back to Acts chapter 12, when Peter was rescued from prison by an angel, where did he go? He went to the home of John Mark's mother, Mary, and they were praying for Peter as he was imprisoned and facing execution. A young slave girl, says a young damsel came, a young slave girl, Rhoda, came to the gate, and she recognized Peter's voice. Well, John Mark's mother, a Christian lady, had a slave girl, and so she had a slave. And so slavery was not uncommon. And so this morning we're going to consider a context. We're dealing with oida. We're looking at an intuitive knowledge, but it falls into a context and is addressed to those who are slaves in bondage to men, to a man. And so you were looking at human slaves. Now, it's not a politically correct subject, I realize, when you consider slaves and slavery. But back then, in that society, it wasn't a bad thing. In fact, being a slave sometimes raise somebody up from being the lowest people in the society. If you didn't have something going for you, sometimes somebody might sell themselves into slavery to better their condition. If you had a good master, he would take care of you. You'd have food, you'd have clothing, and he would take care of you, but you would do his bidding. And so you were a slave to that master. And yet, it isn't condemned. Now we're going to be looking at the book of Colossians. Don's been working in Colossians the last couple of weeks at least. And so as we look into the book of Colossians, Paul does deal with slavery. Now there are two kinds of slavery spoken of in the Bible. And, you can have a yoke of bondage, as the bulletin cover says. You can be a slave to the yoke of the law. And sometimes people were slaves to the yoke of the law. And so you can be in bondage. We've been freed from that yoke of bondage, so we're not under any kind of a law today. You could be a slave in other ways also. You could be a slave. Romans chapter 7 deals with being enslaved to the sin nature. And Romans 8, you can, if you frame your mind on the things of the flesh, well, that's where your mind is. You can become a slave essentially to the sin nature when you're carnal. And so there are different ways you can be a slave. But then on the positive side, Paul begins his writings, and he begins them with Paul, a bond slave belonging to Jesus Christ. That's a common way that he begins. So Paul is a slave of Christ. He's a slave of God. And so God is his master. Now that is true. God, we are slaves. We're bond slaves who belong to Christ. He purchased us, and so he's paid the payment for us, and we should set him aside as Lord in our hearts today. And so that's something that we should do as grace believers. He is our master, our divine slave master. He purchased us. And so we won't go to 1 Corinthians 6:20. We won't go to 1 Peter 3:15. We won't go to those passages into Romans chapter 7 and chapter 8, some of the passages that I just alluded to. But when you go there, you do see that there was slavery But what we are looking at is where people were physically slaves to physical men who were their masters. And so it's in that context that we do find in Hoya, and it does deal with things to come. Now, when you come to Colossians, it should ring a bell in our minds that Colossians, some of the Colossian Christians did have slaves. That was, and so Paul addresses them. When we get into the text today in Colossians 3, it's going to correspond and be very similar to the passage Paul wrote to the Ephesians in Ephesians chapter 6. And so he describes how different individuals should relate to one another as believers. And so he does deal with children obeying their parents, and then he goes on to deal with slaves, the slaves. And so the slaves, these were literal slaves, and there were slaves in the church. Now we know of one slave master in Colossae, and we do know him by name, and he was apparently, we trust he was a good slave master, and yet he had a bad slave, and that was Philemon. And so we do know that Philemon was a leader in the church. At least the church in Colossae met in his home. It was a house church, and so they met in his home. And Paul sends greeting to him, sends greeting to his wife, Apphia, and to apparently his son, who was also probably he was a fellow servant. And so Archippus again, Paul knew these people by name. And yet, just be reminded, before we move on, that Paul had never been to Colossae. Many of the church in Colossae probably wasn't a big church, but most of them had not seen him by face, he says in Colossians 2 and verse 1. And so they didn't know Paul personally face to face, but some did. And so Don suggested that, well, and I believe that some of them probably went to Ephesus, about 100 miles to the west. They went over on business to the metropolis there and carried on business, and some of them were led to the Lord there. And so you have Epaphras, who's mentioned in chapter 1, verse 7. He seemed to be a pastor, but yet he prayed. He was a fellow. It was a fervent prayer we find later in Colossians, but he also in Philemon, he was a fellow prisoner with Paul. So whether he was with Paul in Rome, as Paul writes this letter from a Roman imprisonment. And so Paul, a prisoner, he writes the letter to the Ephesians, to the Philippians, to the Colossians, and then to Philemon, two of them going to Colossae. But when he writes to the Ephesians and the Colossians, he does emphasize slavery. And so he does make a point to address those who are slaves. And so but he knows these people. Another possibility is some of the people who were led to the Lord in Ephesus maybe went out on evangelistic missions up to Colossae and up through Hierapolis and Laodicea. Over in the Lycus River Valley, they could have gone over there and done that too, but some probably made their way to Ephesus. And so Paul does know some of these people, and he knows them by name. Now he comes to know another fellow from Colossae by name, and he comes to know him pretty well, and that's the man Onesimus. And so when he writes to Philemon, he's dealing with Philemon's slave. So Philemon, a leader in the church in Colossae, we don't know how many slaves he had, but we know he had at least one who was a bad slave, who was a runaway slave. And so when Paul writes to him, he speaks of Onesimus. Onesimus had been useless. He was a useless slave. He plays on words, but he says he was useless. But now he's useful. He's useful both to me and to you, Philemon. And so he's useful to both of us. And so there was a change in Onesimus as Paul describes him as his child. He led him to the Lord. And so he's one of Paul's children in the faith. And so he became a believer, and now he's useful. But Paul thought about keeping him there in Rome because he was useful to him, and he was helping Paul in some way, and so he could have stayed. He thought of just sending his letter to Colossae and letting it ride. But he recognizes that Onesimus is the personal property belonging to Philemon. And so he is a slave of Philemon. And so he's going to send him back, and he does. As he writes the letter, he writes it from Philemon's perspective as he's reading it, that I sent it. And so he did. He's going to send him with the letter that goes to Colossae, and the letter, personal letter to Philemon. Then he sends one on to Ephesus. And so he sends this letter, and it deals with Onesimus, and that's the whole thing he deals with. But he leaves the choice as to what to do up to Philemon. Philemon can take him back. He suggests you receive him now as a brother rather than as a slave. Yeah, he's your slave, but receive him now as a brother, not just as a slave. He's your brother in Christ. And yet he doesn't say, Philemon, release him. May imply that he could, but he doesn't say, give him his freedom, but he does send him back, realizing that he is Philemon's property. And he even says that if he stole from you, implied there, if he's done anything that's incurred some debt to Philemon, then Paul says, charge that to my account, I'll pay it for him. And so Paul wrote concerning a slave and a master, and he deals with the slave and the master. Now, I do want to read just a couple of other things before we look at our text this morning, and that's because we'll just notice that this was something that was accepted in the New Testament. Peter writes about slaves, and we see that when we go to 1 Peter chapter 2. And in verse 18, he says, slaves, it says servants, it's the word for slaves. He says, slaves, be subject to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward, those who are crooked ones. And so you have good and bad masters. Peter recognizes that, and he tells them, you serve. You don't want to suffer grief for doing wrong, but it's something you, if you're going to suffer for doing well and doing good, then that's something, that's the way you should suffer. And he uses Christ as an example of that in the context. And so Peter, writing to those of the diaspora, he writes about how to slaves. He addresses slaves. Now, back, I mentioned Ephesians chapter 6, and when we come to Ephesians chapter 6, you also have an address to the slaves and to the masters. And so Paul writes to the Ephesians in Ephesians 6 and verse 5, servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh. And so by that standard, they did have masters who were humans. With fear and trembling is how they were to be obedient. In singleness, sincerity of your heart as unto the Christ. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but as slaves belonging to the Christ, doing the desirous will of God out from the soul. And so the word heart here is not cardia, it is psuche, it's soul. So out from their emotions, they are to their emotional makeup, they're to do the desirous will of God, and to do it to please not men, but you do it to please God. And he says, with good will, doing services to the Lord and not to men. And then he continues, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive from the Lord, whether he be bond or free. So it doesn't matter if you're doing what you ought to do and you're doing good, then you can't expect to receive from the Lord. So a free man and a slave, he says, you need to do the will of God and do it, do good service. You know that you'll receive from the Lord. Verse 9 goes on and addresses masters. And so these are Christian masters. And He says, you masters do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of persons with him. Now, if you will, go with me over to Colossians chapter 3, and we want to move into verses 22 through 25. We'll touch 4:1 just in, as we begin here. You'll notice in verse 22, though, what does he say? It says servants in the AV. It's the word doulos. It's a slave. Slaves, he says. Now, I should say something here. I just mentioned doulos back over in 1 Peter 2:18. It's a term for a house slave. And so it was a lowly slave, a real low slave, the house slaves there. But here he uses the word doulos, slaves. He says, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh. That sounds a lot like Ephesians chapter 6. And so he's addressing those who are slaves. Now, he doesn't say you slaves rebel and try to get freedom or sneak away. Don't try to become a free man. He doesn't say that. He just says slaves obey. And how much do you obey? He says you obey in all things. And so, but it's the masters according to the flesh, and it's measured by, you do it measured by all things, though. And so you do be obedient to your master. And that's, and he says, as he continues on here, not with eye service. Now, it's made up of the word for eye, and it's made up of the word for a slave. Not being eye slave, serving with your eyes, not being a slave with your eyes, just something that when the boss is watching. Now that reminds me, we don't have slaves today. Some parts of the world they do. There is slavery in some parts of the world, but not here. We haven't had slavery here in a long time, since the past the mid-1800s, but after the Civil War, they were free. So we really don't have slavery, so we don't really have anything to relate to when it comes to being a slave to somebody. But the one thing that would apply to us, what he says here, it would apply to us as being employee, working for an employer. That's as close as we come, except the employer doesn't own us. Some might think they do. But they don't own us. We can walk off and get another job if we feel like it. If we don't like it, we can leave. And we can do it at any time we feel like it. We can just walk off and we're not a slave to them. They don't own us. And yet in the New Testament times they did. But what he does say here would be applicable to those who do work for somebody. You get paid for it. You work for a price. You get paid. And so you do have whatever you agree upon. And so you do work. And so you should work. You get paid to work. And you're supposed to work. Now, I spent a number of years working in a secular job in a grocery warehouse. And there were some men on the job who, they didn't carry their weight, but they would drag along all night just fiddling along. But then as soon as the boss showed up, they were good workers. If the boss stood over them with a whip, well, they would have been good workers if the boss had been watching. But as soon as the boss would leave, they'd go back to whatever they were doing or not, whatever they weren't doing. They would continue on as they were, but they wouldn't work and let. But if the boss saw them, They would really knuckle under sometimes, which was kind of ridiculous because they kept records of how much they did in the night anyway. But they were guys who were that way. But they were doing it as eye service. But it goes on in a similar way that would be pleasing to men. And so when he says something that says men pleasers, you're doing something that's going to be pleasing to men. And so that was the you didn't do it as trying to look good on the job, and you didn't do it for men, and you didn't do it when the boss was watching just to see what you were doing, but you were to be consistent in work. And that's what he says to the slaves, you obey your masters measured by the flesh, but you do it measured by all things, everything that the master tells you to do. You do it all. And so he tells you to how to do it. Ephesians, he speaks of good masters and those who were not so good. But as you come here, he says, not with eye service as men pleasers. And so that's something that would be a slave could do that. If the boss was there standing over him, he became a real good slave. And he would do it to please the master, or he might just work to please them. He might be the hardest worker in the field. And yet, as he worked in the field, he would do it to please men. But he says, not with eye service, not just when you're being watched and not just to please men. And so the next part of the verse goes on, but in singleness of heart. And so here it is, heart, but in singleness, in sincerity of heart, simplicity. You don't have a duplicity. You don't have, you're not trying to just please men when you do it. You do it with sincerity as you serve your master doing what you're supposed to do. And he goes on, fearing God. Now notice here, in Ephesians, they said you fear the master, you do it with fear. And so you don't want, but you don't want to displease your master either, and you don't do it with fear. But here it's fearing God. And so that changes the picture here. And so when you work, you do it fearing God. And so he moves on in the next verse, and whatsoever you do, and when he says, and it is whatsoever you should happen to be doing, he says. Now notice what he goes on to say. He says, you work out from a soul, out from a soul. And so you work it out from your emotional makeup, but you work. You do it. You put yourself out. And it is just the normal word for work. You expend energy as you work, but it is a work. And you yourself work. You work it, and it's a middle voice, so you are doing it. You work out from a soul. And how do you do it? As to the Lord and not to men. And so you serve us unto the Lord. Now, when I worked on the job, there was a fellow who was in seminary when I was in Bible college. He worked there later on, too, but he was a good Christian fellow with a good testimony, but the men on the job didn't like it when they started hiring Christian young fellows to work on the job. And because most of us would go in and work, and we would work, and we would work hard. And so they called us all preachers. Not too many of them became, well, some of them did become preachers, some didn't, but the preachers, they didn't like the preachers. And so you got persecuted because you would go in and put in a good night's work and leave sweaty and tired. And some of them, they got pushed because the management saw that you could work harder than the crew normally worked. So they liked the preachers on the job. And so, but the rest of the crew really didn't. Interestingly enough, the fellow I was going to refer to, several fellows came to know the Lord. Quite a few guys did actually on that job. It was kind of interesting, and some of them went on with the Lord. As far as I know, the last time I saw them, they were growing some and had Bible studies at break times and stuff. So it was kind of an interesting thing. It was a mission field. People from the Bible college used to say it was the missionary graveyard because you made good money. But most everybody left and ended up going into Christian work or something. But this one fellow, they'd say something about working, and he'd always say, I'm working for the Lord. I'm working for the Lord. Now, that kind of rubbed me and some of the other Christian guys on the job, because I wasn't working for the Lord. I was working for the company, and they gave me the check, but I was working as unto the Lord, but I wasn't working. He wasn't giving me the check, so to speak. It was okay what he said, but we were working as unto the Lord. Well, here with the slaves in the first century, they were to work, and notice he says that they were to work as to the Lord, and so, and not unto men. And so they weren't, the slave, he was to do a good job. He was to do all that he was told to do. He was to be obedient and to keep on doing so. And he was to do whatever he did that, you know, it says heartily. He was to do it out from his soul. He was to do it with good feeling about it, you could say, as he served as a slave. And he was to do it, as we saw in the previous verse, with sincerity, fearing the Lord. But it was as to the Lord and not unto men. And so it wasn't just serving the master. You do serve the master. And so that was what they were to do. But yet they were to work as to the Lord rather than just serving the human master. Now he's going to go on and explain that a little bit as we go on in the text here as we move on. And I might point out also, didn't mention it, but you have eye service and men pleasers. The only other place you find these two words is in Ephesians 6. And so Ephesians 6 does use these two terms as we read it at the beginning in Ephesians 6:6. They were to do that. Now, you work to please God though, and that's where we should do it. But yet we do please men. And I want to go back and look at a few places where we just find the word pleasing used. And it is used, Paul used it of pleasing men in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 33. And let's look at just a few references that do relate to how you serve as Paul served as an apostle. And yet he did it not seeking things. He wasn't doing it for himself. And so what I'm going to begin in verse 31, 1 Corinthians 10, 31. Whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. And so whatever you do, you do it to the glory of God. That should be the focus that we have in anything that you do. And so you do it to the glory of God. And he continues, give none offense. Don't put anything out that somebody's going to strike their foot on and stumble. And so he says, give none offense, neither to the Jews nor to the Greeks, the word Gentile, it's a non-Jews, Gentiles, nor to the church of God. And so, of course, this is where we see that God sees three races of people, Jew, Gentile, church of God. And so, but you don't want to do something that's going to give offense. And so when he says the Jews to the Gentiles, he's dealing with those who are unbelievers. And so he says that you don't do it to, you don't give offense to them. But then in verse 33, he says, even as I please all men in all things. And so he did please men, but he didn't go out. He was still serving the Lord, but he would do things. And this is not in the slave-master relationship that he speaks here necessarily, but he says, not seeking mine own profit, but the profit implied there of many, that they may be saved. And so that was his purpose. He did serve. He served Jews, Gentiles, and then he did serve believers as well. But when he was out there, he did seek to please men in all things. He wasn't looking out for himself. And Paul did sacrifice a lot as a man. He served. He did a lot of, he didn't have an easy life. And you can go through the Corinthian epistles especially, and over in Philippians and different places he speaks about it in the pastoral epistles. You see that Paul went through an awful lot serving the Lord, and it wasn't an easy life, but he wasn't looking out for Paul, number one. And so he wasn't a slave of men, but he didn't care for him. He wasn't out to please himself and to gain profit concerning himself. Now, It's kind of interesting. It just came to mind. I mentioned it in class the other day. We were talking about came up, something came up, and there are those who think that preachers are rich people, and they think that preachers all are rich. And there was a time I worked for Lockheed for a short time down in Burbank, and when I got the job there, they knew that I'd been a preacher. And so they all thought that the preachers they knew of, they were all televangelists, rich pastors down in Southern California. So they were sure that I was just working there just to do something. I didn't need money. I was rich. I didn't know I was as poor as a church mouse at the time. But they think you're rich because you're a preacher. Well, Paul wasn't, that wasn't the case with him anyway, but he did serve the Lord, and he had his motive was not to look out for Paul to gain profit for himself as he served. Now, we want to go over to Galatians chapter 1 with the idea of pleasing again in Galatians chapter 1 and verse 10. And he says, we're just going to jump right into this context. Well, I'll begin in verse 9. As we said before, so I say now again, if any man preach any other gospel, a different gospel unto you than that ye have received, let him be accursed. And so he's not going to be somebody that's, you don't want to identify with this kind of a guy. For do I now persuade men or God? Or do I speak to please men? For if I pleased men, I should not be a slave belonging to Christ. And so Paul wasn't out trying to please men. He was a slave of God, of Christ, he says here. And so he's persuading men by the gospel that he preaches for, and this is for believers, the gospel for believers. But he goes on to say, he wouldn't be a slave of Christ if he was out as persuading men and trying to please men. And so you don't try to please men, and that's what he says. When you, as a slave in the first century, you didn't try to please your master just by your eyes and work when he's there, and you didn't do it just to please men, but yet your master is not just the master, the human master, but you serve the Lord, you serve Christ. And so he does emphasize that. Now, there were Jews in Thessalonica. They failed to please God in 1 Thessalonians 2:15. And in Romans chapter 8 and verse 8, we find another group who were unable to please God, and that's those who are carnal. And so there's some who can't and don't please God in their condition. But Paul did seek to please God. And I want to just move over to 1 Thessalonians, the next book over from Colossians, as we go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, and we'll look at verse 1 here, where Paul, again, describes how the Thessalonian church, how they should order their lives. He says, furthermore, then, we beseech you, and that's, we ask you as an equal, erotao, brethren, and we exhort you, we encourage you, and it's, you could say, in or by the Lord Jesus, that as ye have received us, received from alongside of us, how ye ought to walk. And so Paul taught them how they should order their lives in that short time that he was with them in Thessalonica. And he says, and to please God, how ye ought to walk and to please God. So ye would abound more and more. So they'd keep on increasing and what they, as they were walking, as they were ordering their Christian lives, he wants them to continue on. But also they were instructed as to how to please God. And so as Christians, we're not out to please ourselves or to please men, but the ultimate goal should be to please God. Now, if you're pleasing God, you will be pleasing to some men, but not to all. some will not be pleasing be pleased with what you do if you are pleasing God. But he wanted them to keep on increasing as they, in their Christian walk and also in their pleasing God, for you know intuitively. And so we're back to another in oida. You know intuitively what commandments we gave you, and it was through the Lord Jesus. And so he goes on to describe the will of, a quality of God's will, not the whole will of God, but a quality of it, how they should possess their vessels in sanctification and honor and so forth. But he wants them to increase, but to please God. And that is something that a Christian slave back in the first century, he wasn't to be just serving to please the master, to be a man pleaser, but he was to please God as he was obedient in all things. Now, and so you do it, everything you do though, you're to do it out from your soul, and this would be looking at it in a positive sense, as to the Lord and not unto men. Now the next verse is where we come to our use of oida. As we come to oida, we pick up with knowing. And so you have a perfect participle here. They've come to know something, these slaves in the Lord who are slaves. He says you come to know factually something, and with the result that you do have a knowledge of it. And so we're going to pick up that. That's our emphasis today with oida, as we look at oida. But I want to just spend a moment here before I move into that verse, because I wanted to go back up to the idea of I kind of passed over with singleness of heart back up in verse 22, and you pick it up here in 1 Thessalonians chapter 3. But in 1 Thessalonians, we're moving, picking up some verses there. That's not where I wanted to go. So, anyway, skip it. I left something out, and it's not exactly where I wanted to pick up. But they were to have obedience, though, out from a proper heart attitude, and they were to do it with a proper emotions, as they did so in the context here. And so they were, but when you did it with simplicity, you weren't supposed to be doing it with ulterior motives and trying to find something whereby you would be pretending to be doing something. That was something I wanted to make more of a point on. I passed over it back up in verse 22, but you do it with singleness of heart, with sincerity of heart, was what we said then. And so you don't have some other ulterior motive for doing it. Well, yeah, okay. My mind wandered back to something. We'll keep moving. We'll go on in verse 23, though. And so they were to work as to the Lord, as we saw in verse 23. Now, in verse 22, I just looked at my outline and decided to pay attention a little bit more. But anyway, you do have intuitive knowledge, and what the intuitive knowledge involves is things to come. It is a prophetic passage. And so that's what we've been focusing on for the last few times, a month ago or whatever, before Don, and thank you, Don, for filling in. But before we covered, we were looking at oida with passages where you know something that pertains to things to come and prophecy. And so that's what why we're in this passage today in this order. But you will receive, and these slaves, they know that they will receive a reward of the inheritance, that is the inheritance. And so there is something that they're promised here, and you'll get paid for it. You'll get paid back. It's not a normal word for reward as we look at it. It's not the normal term that we think of. But they've come to know that they will receive from the Lord. And when it says you're going to receive, it's just a normal word to receive something. But it's to receive from someone. It's a compounded word. And so you receive from somebody, and you're going to receive. You're going to receive a reward, a recompense, something that you will be paid back for. And so it's kind of like a payback. In fact, let's go ahead and look at this back in Luke 14 and verse 12. It does occur a few times. And so in Luke chapter 14, verse 12, he says, He says, then said he also to him that bade him, when thou makest a dinner or a supper, call not thy friends, nor thy brethren, neither thy kinsmen, nor thy rich neighbors, lest they also bid thee again, and recompense be made thee. And so he's sending out the invitation to the wedding feast here, and as he does so, he says you send out into the highways and byways. But if you call in all of these people who are well-to-do and all of your friends, your neighbors, your family, all of these people, you bring them in, they're going to pay you back. They're going to think they need to pay you back. But they were to call the poor, maimed, and lame, and blind, and that was how they were when you invited somebody to them. Wedding feast. We won't go through the context. It is eschatological, but as you look at it here, you see they'll get recompense. Then that's the word we're looking at. They'll get payback when they invite some guest in. So they get payback. That's in a good sense. It is used in a negative sense as well. But back over to Colossians chapter 3, we'll pick up there again. As we come into the chapter here, he says that you'll receive the recompense, the payback, that is a reward. Probably further description of the payback here, describing it further, what you're going to receive. It's an inheritance. And so you get an inheritance. Now all of us have, we'll get an inheritance. And it's not our intent to spend our time going through inheritance. It would be a subject that would be of interest again. But I just want to look at the believer's inheritance just for a moment and the kind of inheritance that we have over in 1 Peter chapter 1. And as we come to 1 Peter chapter 1, we'll look at verses 3 through 6 as we come into the context. But he begins in 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 3. He says, well spoken of is the God, even the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who, according to the standard of his much mercy, hath begotten us again unto a living hope, not a lively hope, but a living hope. And the basis of that living hope is through the intermediate agency of the resurrection of Jesus Christ out from dead ones. And so we do have a living hope, but we were begotten again, and that goes back to regeneration. You were born again. And so this is one of the places where you have a reference to regeneration. You have two words dealing with regeneration. And so this is one of the references. You can also see it in Titus 3:5, another term. But then as you look at this in verse 4, so you were born again, begotten again to a living hope, to an inheritance, it continues on, to an inheritance. Now, the kind of inheritance we have, it's incorruptible. And so it's not going to decay. It's undefiled. and so it can't be muckied up, and it doesn't fade away. It fadeth not away. And so that's a description of the inheritance that we have. And so it's when you were born again, you do have an inheritance. You can anticipate in the future that you will receive an inheritance, and that's inclusive of believers, all believers. You will get an inheritance. You do have one, and it's not like your inheritance here, which again, in contrast, it can decay. Some things you get may decay. They can become muckied up, and they can fade away. And so they can lose their luster. But this is one that is reserved, and I would translate it's kept. It's being kept in heaven for you. And so your payback is in heaven as a believer. That's where your inheritance is. And as he speaks of this to the slaves in Colossae, you do have an inheritance. But it's the same kind of inheritance that Peter speaks of. It is kept in heaven for you. And so who, and the who you goes back to you, some read us, but I'd read it who, you who, are kept. And this word kept, it's a military term. You have a military guard around about you. It's you're garrisoned about by, like, protected by troops all around you, but it's being garrisoned about by the inherent power belonging to God through faith unto salvation. And this is one that's ready to be revealed at a quality of last time. And so we don't have this inheritance now, but it is kept in heaven for us, and we're being guarded to guarantee that we'll get it. And it is there in heaven, as it, we'll stop at that verse, though you do see the receiving the end of your faith, even the salvation of your souls in verse 9. But again, we'll stop at verse 5, as said verse 6. But anyway, as you notice, you have an inheritance. And he gives a description of this inheritance and where it's located and how we're being guarded, garrisoned about, so that we will get our inheritance. And so he goes, going back to Colossians chapter 3 again, he says, knowing that from the Lord you shall receive the reward, the recompense, the payback of that is an inheritance. And so as you serve, and that's not just true of slaves, but he's addressing slaves here, and that's why I took the context in and dealing with slavery. But the slaves, they were to serve, but all believers have a payback, or receive a reward from the Lord. And he says, for you serve as slaves the Lord Christ. And so they serve Christ, they serve the master, but they're to be obedient to their master, but their ultimate master, the Lord, their divine slave master, is the one who will reward them. And they're the ones who, he's the one who will provide for them. And so you do serve the Lord Christ as your divine slave master. And so you serve him as a slave. And so you slave to the Lord, even as you do serve your masters according to the flesh. And so that is all instruction here to believing slaves. And so you're to work as to the Lord, unto the Lord. And that's the direction that they should do. And they're, as they do, not just pleasing men. But in verse 25, we go on and we do have an impartation upon the unrighteous. They'll get what they have coming. But he that doeth wrong, that is, that which is not right, shall receive for the wrong, that which isn't right, which he hath done. And so he's still addressing those who are slaves here, but you will receive what, and so the slave who doesn't do right, he will receive for that. And it goes on, and there is no respect of persons. You have the same statement, no respect of face, back in Ephesians chapter 6. And so he addresses slaves, though, and this is where we find that the slaves know that they will receive something. They will receive a recompense, a payback, a reward that consists of inheritance because they do serve the Lord. Verse 1 of chapter 4 moves on, masters, give unto your servants that which is right and equal, knowing that ye also have a master in heaven. So he addresses believing masters as well. Masters, Christian masters, were to treat their slaves well. And you could say that if a Christian operates and manages a business, he should be fair and he should treat them without equity. He should treat his employees well. But back in the first century, they were slaves. And so the masters, those who owned the slave, they were to treat them well. And that's the instruction here. He gives an instruction, as we read in Ephesians 6 also. But the slaves, we're looking at the slaves, they are to be obedient in all things. And they're to keep on being obedient. That should be the customary thing for them, that they're obedient in all things as they serve their master, their human masters. Not just doing it with eye service, not just to please men, but fearing God as they do it with a simplicity, a singleness of heart, without any trying to prove something. They're to do it with a good motive, as they do serve because they serve the Lord. But whatever you do, you work as unto the Lord. And so that's where he ends up with the slaves. You're serving your master. You're being obedient to him, but ultimately you are serving the Lord. And so that's and not just men. And so you need to pay attention, knowing. And he said, and so they've heard it. The word has gone from Paul through those who were teaching in Colossae, and this was true. No, the slaves. This would have been true of Onesimus, but Onesimus, he wasn't a believer when he was in Colossae. He had to go to Rome, meet up with Paul before the slave, runaway slave, became a believer. And as he got back to, he was on his way back to Colossae, but the same letter written to Philemon about Onesimus was carried at the same time. This was carried back to the church in Colossae, and so it would have applied to Onesimus the slave, but the master was to receive him as a brother, not just as a slave. But he does say that you will receive a payback, a reward, and so you will get that, and it's an inheritance, because you are serving as a slave of the Lord Christ. And so that, again, the only application we have for us today dealing with slaves and masters is dealing with your workplace and what you do. And that does have to apply. You should work as unto the Lord, and you should do what your job requires you to do. But in the first century, if they were slaves, and God didn't say free them all to the Christian masters, he told them to be kind to them, to treat them well. And the slaves on the other side, they were to do their job. But it was a completely different outlook than in our modern society, how they looked at it. Sometimes if they had good masters, it elevated their position in the world sometimes. And sometimes they could be raised up in society. If they had well-to-do and influential masters, they might be well at the up in society. But at the same time, sometimes the slave, he ran the household, he ran the affairs, he handled the finances. And then there were those who were the lowly household slaves. But whatever their condition was, whatever their position was, they were to serve as to the Lord and not to men. And again, not just trying to please men and not doing it with eye service. Don't just work when the boss was there. So, Father, we're thankful again for your word. We're thankful again that we do have instruction. We see things in the first century that were different in that society than in our society. And yet, when we do work, we can work as unto you and do what we should do and what we're supposed to do. And in the end, we can do it so that you get the glory and not us. But as we do live the Christian life, and this is what the slaves in Colossae were to do, They were to live their Christian life where they're slaves, and that was true of all Colossians, where their slaves are free. They still serve the same divine slave master, whether slaves were free, and yet we're thankful as we consider that the future, no matter what our position is in society, that we do serve Christ, and we do have an inheritance that's reserved for us in heaven. So we're thankful for the prospects before us and the anticipation that one day we will receive all that you have promised to us because of the work of your Son has been applied to us by the Spirit. So again, just might we be appreciative of the freedom that we do have, and yet might we use it to accomplish those things you have for us, to bring glory to you, and we'd be grateful. Amen.